Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Life Coach Radio Network. I'm Jen Duffy, and thanks for joining us tonight for this edition of the Happy Healthy Hour. Callers can dial in to 646-716-9397 and press 1 at any time if they would like to be on the air and placed in the queue. We'll be taking questions and comments from the audience tonight. So today's topic is the connection between body, mind, and mouth, life's eating connection, which happens to be the title of today's guest's book. And I'm really delighted to welcome Margaret Marshall to the show tonight. Margaret is certified in nutrition, adult learning, personal communication, neurolinguistic programming, group dynamics, storytelling, and edutainment. She's the founder of Margaret Marshall Associates and the Why Weight Coaching Method. And in addition to being the author of Body, Mind, and Mouth, Life's Eating Connection, she's also a Hofstra University continuing ed instructor and contributing writer for the Critical Healthcare magazine. For almost 3 decades, she's helped nearly 10,000 people live a thin life, and she's been featured on TV, radio, and in print. She's a national member of the National Speakers Association and currently serves on the board of the New York City chapter. So quite an accomplished guest we have with us tonight. Welcome, Margaret. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good, and Jennifer, it's my pleasure to join you tonight.
Well, thank you. Well, before we get started with today's topic, regular listeners know that I always start off the Happy Healthy Hour with what I'm drinking. And today's drink was supposed to be a super berry smoothie filled with antioxidants and all good stuff, but I have a confession. I was running around this morning and doing some errands, and I meant to get home and make a smoothie, but instead I passed a coffee chain, and I felt the magnetic pull in. I turned into the parking lot, and I bought myself an iced green tea latte because I just really wanted one. And now, granted, there are plenty of worse ways I could have spent my money and calories, and I've said before on the show that I generally think drinks like that are kind of a waste of calories and money. And so does that make me a hypocrite? I actually think it kind of makes me human. And so no matter how much I know about how to be healthy and how I generally feel better when I make healthy choices, I still slip up on occasion. And, you know, that's a little bit about what we're going to talk about today and why we make the choices we do, making better choices, and how to not get derailed when we allow for indulgences or experience missteps along the way. And so enough of my coffeehouse confessions, and let's get started with the show. So, Margaret, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got into this work?
Absolutely, I can. And I appreciate your story about your coffee house today because we're all human, you know, and we all do things. And I do, you know, some TV presentations, and I try and get clients to come on with me, and they say to me, Margaret, I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And, you know, we make all kinds of choices, and that, you know, just move forward. You had it for a
exactly.
reason. You enjoyed it, and you enjoyed it. That's all. But for myself, I have been in this business for 27 years. This is my 27th year.
Wow!
And,
congratulations.
Oh, thanks. And it doesn't seem it, I have to tell you, but I would say to you, I started because taking care of myself. When I was 30 years old, I was a size 16, and that was after being an overweight child and having the nickname Margaret, the big fat target. And then I did a lot of crazy things in my teens. And in writing this book, I thought, when I thought back, I said, wow, I wonder if I had an undiagnosed eating disorder. Maybe not that severe, but I would go days without eating or just eat yogurt for days, or I'd overeat like crazy just to try and keep a healthy body weight. And in my 20s, I got married, I had my children, and by the time I was 30, I was out of control with my eating. I was a size 16, and I thought, I just don't want to spend my adult life in an overweight, unhealthy body. And so that was when I took control. And once I took control and I realized, you know, how it changes your view on your life, I hate to use the word happiness, but certainly happiness falls into it. And I got into the, you know, started working with people myself. I was a speaker for Weight Watchers for 17 years. And I loved everything I did there. I didn't always love the gimmicks. And so I knew I wasn't going to spend my entire life there, but it worked very well into raising my family, my scheduling. And then when my son left for college, my second child, I had more time to myself. My job as a mother was redefined, and I started Margaret Marshall Associates in 2004. So it's almost 10 years I'm in my own business.
Well, that's fantastic that you wanted to share your own, you know, personal experiences and help others, because I think in a lot of ways there's so many similarities, but yet also a lot of individual reasons. And I know your book draws a lot on anecdotes from your work with clients. What are some of the similarities you see with people when they are trying to lose weight? And then what are some of the things that really can be very specific to each individual?
Well, I'm going to answer the specific one first, and I think that's your individual family life and your relationships with your family and also with the family of origin, the family that you created your eating habits with. So I think sometimes that gets a little specific. What is interesting is when I work with clients and they'll tell me something that's so deep and intimate to them and their eating, and they think they're the only one that this has ever happened to. And I don't want to say to them, you know, I've heard this a zillion times, but I do say, you know, you're not unique in that challenge or you're not unique in that issue. And I think that tends to help them, because people stay in their own homes thinking, I'm the only one this is happening to, and I'm the only one that feels like this, and nobody understands me. And that's just not so. You know, if people could just realize to share their thoughts, they would realize many of us feel the same way and think the same way.
Well, and then it doesn't necessarily make you weak. Your story about the donuts and keeping the donuts in the house in your book really resonated with me. And I think everyone has kind of a trigger food. And despite their willpower, you know, for me, I have a hard time keeping peanut butter in the house. I know that sounds so benign, you know, a jar of peanut butter. But, you know, if it's a moment of stress eating, I'll just eat spoonfuls of peanut butter. And it's just like afterwards, I'm like, why did I eat that much peanut butter? I don't feel very good. But certain things, you know, you just have a hard time controlling.
Right, right. And I always say our old habits get very strong in our weak moments. And so there are some foods that maybe each person should think, you know, is this something I should keep in my house? And the donut story in the book is when my children were younger and my husband worked in the city, he would stop sometimes and pick up donuts on the way home. But the store, and I won't mention the store, their commercials said, buy a dozen donuts. So that's marketing. He would buy a dozen donuts, and he would eat one or two. Each of the kids would eat one, and I had eight donuts the next day in the house with me. And, you know, my strongest thing was to just get rid of them rather than keep facing them all day long, because you never know what your day is going to bring.
Yeah, and you don't need 12 donuts. Just one as a treat would be enough, but a lot of the marketing conditioning we experience,
right,
you know, day in and day out, makes us think we need a lot more than we really do.
Right, and this is unrelated, but I find this interesting. This particular donut chain no longer says that. Now their main thing is to sell coffee. So they get you in there to buy the coffee, and then they push the donuts on you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the way the world has come.
They're hard to resist.
I didn't want to write that in the book, because then everybody would, you know who I was talking about.
Yeah. And so when you are working with your clients, you know, what typically are the main objectives that you are trying to address? And, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, I want to lose weight, but what are some of the ways that you approach that?
I would say, first of all, when I start working with a client in my coaching business, I have a unique way of teaching people how to eat so that they go into their own mind and their body, and they start to learn to listen to the messages from their body, because if you're overweight or if you're unhealthy, you've been listening to the wrong messages. You've got in tune with the wrong messages. So we try and change the messages and let them see that, you know, the message that you've eaten enough, the message that you really don't want that right now, it's all there if you tune into it. So the first thing I try and get them to do is, and I teach them, is how to eat balanced and how to, many people, by the time I start working with them, they've tried every single diet plan that's out there.
Mm.
And what what people tend to do is they'll take what they like best from each diet plan and make their own plan. But they don't realize that each diet plan gives you this and takes this away. You know what I mean? They have their own balance there. That this, so I try and teach them, or I do teach them, how to eat, how to forget all the diet plans that they've been on and the messages that they've gotten, unless they've learned something that is really working for them, and how to eat balanced from all the food groups that we have in our world, and forget the diet foods and the products that they're buying that they've been sold in the past in different diet plans. So I do that first. I get them to eat balanced with real food, and then we work on their issues, whatever their issue is that's standing between them and their ideal body weight and optimum health. And so that's, you know, that could be different for everybody. And sometimes they don't even know, they don't know what it is sometimes.
Yeah, and I love that you stress both in your book and then through your speaking that there really is no quick fix for losing weight. And I'm just always struck by time and again that we still, people are still thinking and looking for that, you know, magic pill or this quick little thing that'll make them lose all this weight, you know, overnight. And then maybe they'll lose some weight initially, but then it'll come back. And, you know, I'm happy to see someone else in the field who, you know, really kind of takes a stance against products that claim to do that. And, you know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, why you really just can't lose weight so quickly and really what it takes for it to be sustainable?
Well, for it to be sustainable, it has to be something that you have a strong desire for. And it has to be something, and I'm making it sound, I hate to use the word has to. I'm trying to think of a better word for that. But anyway, you know, it has to be something that you want to do every day. You have to work at, I know I say healthy body, healthy life, a thin life. Living a thin life has nothing to do with the number on the scale. It means that each day you're either at your ideal weight, not something a chart is telling you. You're either at your ideal weight or you're doing what it takes to working to get there. So it's not the number on the scale. It's the habits and practices that you're doing each day. And that takes time, and there's so many empty promises out there that people just buy into to have a quick fix. And, you know, the quick fixes are making us heavier. They just make us more and more overweight.
And causing other health problems sometimes, and it's just,
sure,
it's not a safe approach. It's kind of getting back to the basics. And, you know, I think the aspect that you really bring in about the emotions, and plenty of people really know what they should eat or shouldn't eat or have some sense of what's healthy or not, but it's not always what's driving their decisions. And then, like you were saying earlier, until you really kind of address that, those root causes, and be a bit more mindful about why you're choosing to eat the things you do or the ways in which you do, you really won't see progress, or you might struggle with it a bit more or longer than you need to. And so I also like the way you defined a thin, healthy life, because I know when I first read your book, I was a little, you know, oh, the word thin, because the word thin can mean so many things in our saying. You know, a lot of times people will say, oh, you're so thin, and the way that they might say it is almost kind of a backhanded, you know, compliment, but not,
insult.
Or there's a lot of connotations. Yeah, and yet when you speak of thin, my understanding is that it's not, you know, it's not a size, it's not a number on a scale, it's just a weight that's healthy for your body and doesn't put stress on your joints and makes you feel like you are in control of what you're eating and the choices you make, and you feel good in your own skin.
Right, and it's either being there or working at being there. You know, you could, and that's where I try and work with people. They can be overweight, but they can start living a thin life while they're overweight, because that's what it takes. If they want to get to their ideal body weight, while they're overweight, they have to start thinking like a person who was thinner. And I hope this makes sense to you, but as they lose weight, I try and get them to realize that if it's 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 50 pounds, you are that thinner person. Once you have that mindset that I am going to do this every day, it's not a I'll stop Monday, or what's one meal doesn't matter, or, you know, come along and eat with me. You know, when you don't fall into those things anymore, those excuses anymore. You're living a thin life regardless of your weight. That's my belief.
And I think it's so easy to say, oh, well, I'll start tomorrow or I'll start after this meal. And I think maybe I'm going to get it wrong, but opportunities versus excuses, is that the word that you use?
I think in the book, I think I said reasons.
Yeah.
Reasons versus excuses. Right.
And
right.
That I thought was pretty powerful too, because you don't think of them as excuses per se. You think it's just kind of maybe timing. Okay, well, I'll do this tomorrow. Or you make yourself think, oh, it's okay now. And the more that you do it, the easier it becomes to just put it off and think that next meal or that next day you're going to try and start being healthier. But before you know it, it's been a kind of a long time of not feeling like your healthiest self.
Right, right. Yes, we do procrastinate. And so can I just share with your listeners the story about the reason versus the excuses so they know what we're saying with that?
Yeah.
And I don't have my book right in front of me, but the story that I say, the name of the book is Body, Mind, and Mouth, and the story that I share in that book is about one of my clients who was going to an amusement park with her two small children, and she was very fearful about how she was going to eat at the amusement park. And I had said to her, you know, in the past she overate a lot at the amusement parks, and I said, well, what's the most important thing with you? It, you know, other than enjoying the day with your family and going on the rides. And she said, well, I really want to have ice cream with my kids. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a reason. The excuse mm-hmm. is, well, I'm at the amusement park. I might as well eat all the fried food they have because what does it matter? I'm going to have ice cream anyway. And then you come home from the amusement park and you say, oh, what does it matter? I ate so much yesterday. What does today matter? That's the excuse. And the reason was, I want to enjoy ice cream with my kids. So eating for a reason and eating for an excuse in my book are two different things.
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, food is very much a part of our culture, particularly as it relates to celebrations. And even you were saying earlier, your family of origin, there's certain foods that can be part of your culture and part of things that are what makes holidays worth, you know, part of it. And you don't want to necessarily say, well, they're not healthy, quote unquote, and so let's do away with them. But it's finding the time and the place and like you said earlier, that balance. And there really are so many tidbits of insight in your book that I love. And in addition to the reason versus excuses, another one that really resonated with me was about rating your food when it comes to indulgence. And honestly, I've been doing it like nonstop lately.
Really? I'm so happy.
Yeah, because you know, I love, especially in the summer, I love summer foods and treats and things like that. And, you know, I do, but at the same time, I try to eat healthy most days and most meals. So when, you know, you think about, and I'll let you tell the anecdote and the sort of rationale behind it because you'll do it better than I can. But, you know, we're just flooded with food constantly. You know, in an office, a lot of times they'll put out a plate of stale cookies. Well, am I going to have that cookie or am I going to have that really great cookie I love from this one specific store, and that's going to be, if I'm going to have a cookie, that's where the cookie is going to be, as opposed to mindlessly eating a cookie just because it's there in front of me. And so rating, you know, your food when it comes to indulgences, because I think so many people think you have to deprive yourself and really give up things you like to be thin and healthy. Can you talk a little bit about that sort of notion of rating your food and finding that balance and still allowing yourself the things you really enjoy, but at the same time making good decisions?
Absolutely. And you've said so much in there I'd love to address. I'll talk about rating my foods. Don't let me forget that. One of the things you said, people think they have to deprive themselves. You know, when I hear someone say that, oh, I'm going to a party, I don't want to deprive myself, you should, you know, weight loss should never be about depriving, right? You know that. And if we can just get everybody to realize that it's not about depriving, it's about choosing the foods wisely. And foods are going to either work for you or against you. And sometimes, you know, the more calorie-laden foods, there's a reason you want to eat that. So when you go to a party or a wedding or just on your daily days, if you take all of the food that is being offered to you, and this is what I have in my book, rate your foods from 1 to 10, and then eat your 8, 9s, and 10s. So if you're at a party, let's say, and your favorite food is there, and it may be a high-calorie food, but it means if I eat this, you know, I will enjoy this party more, make sure you eat it. But maybe there's chips and dip or something else there that in the past you have just eaten just to eat it. Maybe it's a five or a six or a seven. You don't need it that day. You need your eight, nines, and tens. Now, you can include your fruits and vegetables in there and have a little extra if that's available, but make sure you eat your 8, 9s, and 10s. And what you may find, your listeners may find, is on different days, different foods will fall into their 8, 9, and 10 category. But eat your 8, 9s, and 10s. Anything you rate under that is mediocre to you for that day, and you don't need it.
I think that's such a great way of looking at it, particularly, too, even when you go out to eat. I feel like sometimes you get in the mindset of, well, everyone around me is having an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert, which often is way too much food than you need, and if you factor in portion size. But, you know, if there's nothing on the menu that we really want for a first course, skip it. Or if there's nothing really that calls out your name for dessert, you know, have a cup of tea or something and don't just get it because you feel like, oh, well, everyone's getting it, unless there's that dessert that's just amazing. And you're like, you know what? It's worth it. Today I'm going to do that, but I'm not going to just eat it because it's there or the people around me are eating it. And that's something you also address. And I know that can be a challenge for a lot of people, being influenced by people around you and also just not, you don't want to disappoint people. So you're being hosted and they're, you know, offering you food and you don't want to make people feel bad. And then you also don't want to be the person at the group who's like, oh, I don't want to eat that. Or I don't eat that. Or the difficult person. And so sometimes that can influence your decisions. And then later you feel badly about yourself for either eating. You feel like you're having to choose between eating something or hurting someone's feelings. And neither is a good solution.
Wow, you've said so much. That's such great insight. And there's so much to address in there. So if I could think back, you being in someone's home, let's say, and you're in someone's home, and this happens very often to people, they made it just for you or have it just for you. And, you know, very often food is love. So you never want to take the love that someone is giving you with their food and throw it back at them by saying, oh, no, no, not for me, you know. So you have to be very careful about the way you respond to that. And there's a few steps here. Number one, if you're someone who doesn't usually eat that food, nobody's going to offer it to you anymore. You'll get used to that. I just had this conversation with a client this week, and we were talking about alcohol because everybody knows him as a drinker and he's trying to cut back, curb, or quit his alcohol consumption. But everyone knows him as a drinker. And he's not a drinker, but who likes to have a couple of cocktails.
Yeah.
And I said to him, because that's how you're known, that's why people say, come on, have a drink with me. Let's go have a drink. Let's go have a drink. But once you become the person who is known for not drinking every time someone says something, people will stop asking. So your actions speak louder than your words. But when somebody is offering you food and it's coming from love and it's not what you choose to have, I think you have to realize it's not insulting to the other person to not have it. And the one word that always works for me is, oh, thank you, maybe a little later. And so you're not really saying no to them, but you're saying yes to yourself. And then they're on to something else, and, you know, they forget that they asked you because you already thanked them.
And that's a great way to approach it because I think that's a lot of people's fear. We all know the people who say, oh, no, I don't eat that. And it seems like those are the people who aren't as – you don't want to be them around as much because they seem like they're constantly judging or they're, you know, somehow superior to you because they don't eat this, they don't eat that. And they're not necessarily the most fun people at your dinner party when they are trying to make you feel bad. Like,
oh,
like you eat
that
or you ate this.
No. And I also believe the less you say – the better it is. I tell my clients all the time, don't go to a party and say, I'm trying to lose weight, I'm trying to watch, I'm trying to be good. You need to say nothing. You need to say nothing because if you say that, people will, like you said, they don't want to hear it, number one. Number two, they will try and twist your arm to get you to eat. It becomes a competition of wills at that
mm-hmm.
point for many people. So the less you say, the better. And like I said, everyone has to find what words work the best for them. For me, if I say thank you, and I'll say, oh, thank you. I don't even say no thank you. I say thank
mm-hmm.
you. I'm going to have
just
that
a subtle
later.
Difference between not no thank you, but thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Don't say no thank you, because the no is what they hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're just tuning in, listeners, you are listening to the Happy Healthy Hour on the Life Coach Radio Network. Listeners can call in to 646-716-9397 and press 1 at any time if you'd like to be on the air. And we have a great guest today, Margaret Marshall, author of Body, Mind, Mouth. And I also hope that at some point you'll check out some of the other shows on our network. We have a great lineup with amazing coaches with a wealth of knowledge and insight to share. And there's also a new sister network, the International Life Coach Radio Network. So I hope you'll also consider checking that out as well. And so let's get back to our discussion. And Margaret, we've been talking a lot about kind of how you manage your eating in more social situations. But I know that there's also another side of things, of the choices that you make when you're alone and you're by yourself, and you know, you might be the kind of person who prepares healthy meals for others but don't take the time for yourself. Or you might be someone who turns to food when they're under a lot of stress. And I know those are two different dichotomies, but maybe we can talk a little bit about each, the stress eater versus the I don't have time in my life eater, like those kinds of things that present challenges to us.
Right, right. In the book, In Body, Mind, and Mouth, I do address a whole chapter on finding the time for yourself, because it is mm-hmm. so important. I also address secret eating, not a whole chapter, but I do address that. And the third thing you said was what? That was the one I wanted to talk about.
About stress first. Eating. And I guess that sort of blends
stress
into the
eating.
Two, maybe.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And really, I believe a lot of it throughout the book is stress eating. But when I work with my clients or I do seminars, when I talk about stress eating, you have to look at stress like an umbrella. And in that umbrella, there's a lot of lines hanging, and each line is an emotion. So it might be happy, it may be sad, it may be anxious, angry, you know, frustrated, whatever it is. And once someone convinces themselves that they're a stress eater, they tend to eat for all of those emotions. But if they can get in touch with which emotions cause them to overeat or turn to food, and which emotions turn them away from food completely, which neither way is good. But if they can get in touch with which emotions cause them to eat, they don't have to be a stress eater. Then they can just focus in on that emotion. So I'll use myself as an example. If I'm worried, I don't want to eat. I can't eat. If I'm angry, the first thing I think of is, what can I eat? What can I eat? What can I eat? So you have to know which emotions lead you where, and then you know how to deal with it. So when I get angry and that's my first thought, I have to take a step back first and say, okay, Margaret, you're angry at the situation, whatever it is. You know,
mm-hmm.
deal with the situation. Just deal with the situation. Deal with the anger in whatever way I need to deal with it. But if I always went to food, and this was especially relevant while raising my children, because they would fight and I would get angry and all I'd want to do is eat, and I would think, I can't do this every time they fight, because this goes on all day long. <You know>? So that was where I really got a grip on knowing that anger leads me to eat. So you have to really know which emotion leads you to eat and how else to deal with it. And also, I just...
It sounds
just,
like... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, yeah.
And this, when I have clients who say, I just felt like chewing. I just wanted to chew on something. Chewing, very often when you need to chew, chewing is energy. So, you know, when you feel like you just need to crunch and chew on something, you're usually angry or frustrated at something, and you're looking to get that energy out, because anger is energy, and you're trying to get it out with your jaw. So pay attention to that. If you're looking for ice cream or something soft, usually looking to be soothed. You need that soothing feeling. So pay attention to the feeling that's going on.
Yeah, I guess my follow-up question to that was just, it sounds like, you know, obviously you're someone who's become very self-aware about these things, but if you've never really thought about, well, when I eat, not for a meal or for when I'm hungry, you know, how can you start to really identify what the emotions are or start recognizing when you are doing it? How do you kind of go about that?
Well, first of all, they can call me. And second, you know, if you really pay attention to what you're doing, a pattern develops.
Mm.
And once you can see that pattern, you can start to see what's going on here. And so, like I said, I learned that I was a stress eater, an anger eater. That was my stress thing to eat for. When my kids fought, my kids are 30 and 27 now. They no longer fight, nor have they lived in the same house for years. But I learned that anger causes me to want to eat, and it was always something, I wanted to go for something crunchy, something hard to chew. So I think if you really are mindful and cognizant of what you're doing, you do see a pattern happen. And with my clients, you know, I ask them to write down what they're eating, but every day I also ask them, there's a slot on my food journal, how I felt today. And I look for what emotions went through for the day, and I help them to see the pattern. Look at what you ate when you were feeling this, and look at what you ate when you were feeling this, you know, and they do start to see a pattern develop. So it is there.
Yeah, that's great insight, and it's interesting that you're the anger. See, I find myself, I've labeled myself from an early age that I'm a stress eater, but it's usually when I feel overwhelmed that I have too many things to do. So instead of tackling the first thing, I'll go make a snack, or I'll go, it's time to eat something before I tackle this, what feels like a monumental amount of work or tasks or things to do. And so for me, I'll write a short list of my to-do list. And so, okay, what are the first three things I'm going to tackle of this bigger list, just to focus and say, okay, you don't need to go make a snack. You had lunch, you know, an hour ago. This is just really a diversionary tactic to keep you from whatever writing it is you have to do, or emails, or, you know, reading, and try to make my to-do list a little bit more manageable. And then
right.
I tend to feel like, okay, you know, and it's usually crunchy, salty, little tidbit snack things that I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just pick at this for a little while instead of doing what I need to do.
Right. Now, that could be frustration. And in the book, I discuss that as well in Body, Mind, and Mouth. And I call that procrastination eating. When you have to do something, and, I think I'll eat something first. And still the task doesn't get done. And the way I found that out with me, of course, you know, I've been doing this for 27 years. The way I found that out with me, you'll think this is funny, but I hate to clean the bathrooms. So I have to clean the bathroom. Well, let me eat something first. Well, now I have to clean the bathroom. Well, let me have a snack. You know, and it would take all day to clean the bathroom. And then, because I never started, but I ate all these snacks all day. So I started to realize this is me procrastinating. And so I address that in my book. And very often I will talk about that at seminars, or I'll talk about that at with my clients, and I say there's such a thing as procrastination eating. And people are like, oh, wow, I do that all the time.
It's not just a few of us
that?
Out there.
I never found it anywhere. I just know that it's there, you know. So, you know, you have to become more and more aware. So losing weight is really not about deprivation, like we mentioned before. It's about knowing why, when, and how you go to food. And food is there to enjoy, but also to nourish your body. So when you're abusing it too much, you're not enjoying it anymore, and you're not nourishing your body.
What I think is interesting, you've mentioned about, you know, your behaviors, your eating habits while you were raising kids. And I know there's a great concern nowadays of the diet of how our children are eating. And, you know, I think it's very true how you mentioned that kids model their behaviors after their parents. And so you could say, here, you eat these, you know, eat these carrot sticks or eat this healthy snack. And then if, you know, you're over in the corner chowing down something else, like, kids see, they absorb the behaviors. And so it's hard to say, do as I tell you to do, but not as I do. And so What are some ways that we can get kids on a healthy path, you know, if you are a parent or you spend a lot of time with children, and so that hopefully help that they'll make good choices now that will set themselves up for life?
Right, and that really is so important. And, you know, I do mention that in the book, that we do, the children model us.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I would say, you know, I've had many mothers call me to come in and work with their young children, and I'm talking before teenage years, and I won't mm-hmm. do that unless the family will be engaged. So unless mm-hmm. the family will work with me, and that's even if the family is not overweight. You know, if it's just one child in the family who's overweight, it's still a family issue. It's always a family issue when you're that age. So, you know, I work with the entire family on that, and usually it's not just one person in the family that's overweight, but it's the habits of the family. And what I found interesting was, like I said, my daughter is now 30, but when my book came out, she read it, and, you know, she had her comments, which were very complimentary, but then she said, "But Mom, now I understand why we did things like we did." And I mm-hmm. thought that was, you know, so insightful, because I worked really hard at
yeah.
keeping a healthy home. But that doesn't mean that there was never cookies or things like that in my house, because if you don't give the kids that, cookies or whatever it is, like my kids were able to pick out a snack that they wanted each week, and we had it in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't do that, they'll go out and overeat wherever they can.
Well, my mom is listening to the show today, and when we were younger, she tried not to ever let us have soda, ever. And I really do think, and we know a lot more now, this was 30-plus years ago, so I know that we know a lot more about how bad soda is for children and whatnot, but the first time I went to a birthday party where they had soda, I went crazy. I was like a soda fiend, came home and got, you know, sick that night. So, you know, you do have to, you can't completely shelter your kids from everything that you think is bad and then, you know, expect that they'll know. There has to be, like, to use that word before, balance. So, again, I'm not advocating that children should drink a lot of soda, but certain things you need to be introduced and not, you know, expect that they're just one day then be introduced and be like, oh my gosh, and never had it and know what to do with it.
Right. And you want to hear a funny story, and this is not in the book. When I used to do their Easter baskets at Easter time, I would never put candy in it. I would put toys in it. Easter baskets were full of toys. And when my daughter became school age, you know, as she went off to kindergarten and first mm-hmm. grade, she came home and she said, "Did you know that the Easter Bunny brings candy to other people?" So I said, "Okay, now it's time. I have to start putting candy in their Easter Bunny, in their Easter basket." So I would put an Easter
Bunny
in.
Why do we have the healthy Easter Bunny?
I would put the chocolate Easter Bunny in, but I would still fill it with all toys. But I thought that was funny. "Mom, did you know?"
Well, and again, in moderation, I think we've gotten to this place of excess, you know, and so does it need to be a basket that's just chock full and brimming of, you know, every kind of candy? No,
right.
You know, then that's we've gotten so far away from moderation and even, you know, making our own homemade treats, because then that, I think, forces you to make less, eat less. It slows the whole process down, and when you can go somewhere and just load up and buy tons of you know, stuff that just kind of sits around and, you know, doesn't actually make anybody feel so healthy, but then you feel badly about wasting it. And I like that you mentioned in your book as well the notion of, I think a lot of us kind of grew up with the don't waste food or this guilt about wasting food or cleaning your plate. Understandably so, because no one wants to waste food, and you're grateful that you have food on your plate, but eating, even when you're full, or your stuff just because it's there, can lead to some not so healthy behaviors as well, because you're not listening to your body.
Right, right. And the example I use in my book, in Body, Mind, and Mouth, is people are so fearful or against throwing food out. And I get that. I can respect that. But what mm-hmm. I always find interesting is at the beginning of the week, they buy fresh fruits and vegetables, and they'll buy, you know, cake or whatever. And at the end of the week, the fresh fruits and vegetables have gone bad, and they have no problem throwing that out. So, but when it comes to throwing out leftover cake or donuts or cupcakes, that's what they have the problem throwing out. You know, and I always find that interesting that they didn't get to eat the fresh fruits and vegetables that they bought, but they have no problem throwing that out. And the example I use in the book and I use in my seminars very often is, you know, how many times have we bought a real Christmas tree for Christmas? We buy the Christmas tree. We put it up, we decorate it, we enjoy it for the holiday. But we don't keep it all year. You know, we paid for it, we got our money's worth, we enjoyed it, and then it goes out. And the same is true when you buy cakes for occasions. You buy it for the occasion, you enjoy it, you paid for it. When the occasion is over, its life is gone. You know, whether it's, if it hangs around in your house for a week, you're going to eat it. If you get rid of it, you're not going to eat it.
Yeah, and you've gotten the value out of it, and, you know, you don't need to finish every last scrap of it if you did, like you said, enjoy it and you had it for that particular occasion, and not force feeding yourself to eat cake every night that week just because you don't want to waste the cake. Eat the broccoli and the kale so you don't have to throw that out at the end of the week like you planned and got derailed because, you know, you're like, oh, well, the cake's there.
Right, right.
Speaking
That's
from
what happened.
Some experience. Yeah. No, but it is, I think also it's a lot about habits too. And once you kind of get into the habit and reinforce those habits, you know, you can stay on a path, and then trying not to beat yourself up if you have a little derailment or fall off and not feel like, okay, that's it. I'm throwing in the towel. I'm done trying to be healthy. It's just too hard. And maintaining a really positive image of yourself and your efforts. And I like that in the book you call fat the F word, because I agree that the word fat is such a terrible word that people will use to describe themselves. And I recently had a woman ask me if she knew, I try to practice yoga when I can, and I have my mom is a yoga teacher, and we really both find a lot of benefits from doing yoga. And I was having a conversation with a woman who asked if she knew where fat girls could go for yoga classes. And she was half joking, but she was half serious. And I was just so upset. She called herself, you know, fat. And also that, you know, she thought she couldn't do yoga or exercise if she was overweight. And, yes, we see a lot of these images of lean people who twist into pretzels to do yoga. But there's so many benefits of yoga or exercise for no matter where, whatever size you're starting from. And, you know, I think people struggle starting on a healthy path if they've already developed, you know, such a negative body image, and it just seems like a vicious cycle. And what's your recommendation to overcome that negative image and stay on the journey even if you experience setbacks?
Well, we'll go back to the F word, and I consider it the F word, and that's the word fat. Now, there's certainly, you know, if I use the word body fat, that means your body composition. But when people use the word, the F word, to describe themselves, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me, because it's so degrading the way people use that word to describe themselves. And once you believe that, you will live it, you know. So I'm trying to think of the situation, but it wasn't that long ago. My son was visiting, and he's 27, and somebody used that word in our presence, and his head, like, whipped around and said, "We're not allowed to use that word." I thought, here he is, 27, that's still ingrained in him, because as kids use that word all the time as to other kids, and that just always made me crazy when I heard that. So I always told my kids, "F is the fat is the fat is the F word. You never use it at anybody." So to get into an exercise routine, again, it makes no difference how much you weigh, what the scale says. You just have to get started, and you have to get started at a level that your body and your health will allow. And then you just work from there. And I ask my clients all the time, I say, because many, very often they tell me, I don't have time to exercise. And I say, just start with 5 minutes a day. The first thing you have to do is get it into your life. Once you get it into your life, then you can build on it. But just get it into your life. Start with 5 minutes a day. And many of my clients, you know, they do. Yoga is great. It's a fabulous exercise. You know, the stretching and the using your own body weight for your weight training is just a fabulous practice, as they call it. But I have clients who do the hula hoop in front of the TV. That's what they can fit into their life.
Yeah.
And that's great exercise. So, I mean, I walk every day. I walk every day for the last maybe 25 to 26 years. But I've added other things in along the way. And one of the things I do now, because working with weights is so important. You know, I'm 57 years old. It's so important for your bone health. I do push-ups against my kitchen countertop every day. Because I don't want to get on the floor because I'll fall on my face. But I just, you know, the further you stand back from the countertop, the more resistance it is. And I just make sure I do that every day and I have my routine down. And I can do that while the television's on. I can do that while I'm cooking dinner. You know, it doesn't take time out of my life to do that. But I know it's good for my core and it's good for my bone health.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I do think, kind of get under the false impression that you have to have the right tools or a class or a gym membership or something, and that will become, to use words we were using before, it becomes an excuse. Well, I can't afford to belong to a gym. I don't have time to go to a gym. I don't have time. The class schedule doesn't work for me. There are so many things you can do just based on what you have at your disposal. You know, I used to travel a lot for a job, and I've mentioned this on a past show, and I started traveling with resistance bands, and I would literally take the towel and put it on the floor and just do, you know, 10 minutes of some exercises with resistance bands, because I felt like, you know, from schlepping around through airports and whatnot, that I was doing more harm to my body than good. And so it just made me feel like I was taking a step to protect my, you know, joints and muscles and stay strong, even though a lot of my day was, you know, awkward positions of lifting bags and overhead bins and just sitting in chairs or sitting on planes and things like that. And you just, you know, and even now I live in the city, Manhattan, and I walk a lot. And I think for people who live in a big city, you often do get some extra exercise through walking, but sometimes just making an even extra conscious note, like, so I'll sometimes get off a subway stop two stops further from my house and walk back if I hadn't had a chance to do some exercise and just want to get an extra boost in. And I think for people who live in suburbs, parking a little further away and taking stairs sometimes versus elevators or escalators and little things like that, just moving more can really start to make, they can add up.
It's amazing. And, you know, you mentioned traveling. And now with the restrictions on the airlines where your luggage can't weigh more than 50 pounds, I like to bring a lot of clothes with me when I travel. So it's very hard for me to travel for under 50 pounds. I don't know how they expect this to be. So what I had to do was I had to go out into the stores and buy sneakers that were the lightest weight sneakers I could find that I could walk in, that I could pack in my suitcase, because that was the one thing. I don't wear sneakers as a general rule. I only wear them to walk. But I knew I had to bring them with me because I knew I'm not going to go away for any length of time and not walk. So once all these restrictions came in, it's like I only use these sneakers to travel because I found the most lightweight sneakers that are great for walking, and I don't want to wear them out because I may never find them again, you know.
That's a good idea, because I know a lot of times people will start packing and then they'll be like, well, I'm probably not going to have time to work out, so I'll leave my sneakers home because they're just taking up too much space. And then you've right off the bat put the idea of I'm not going to have time to exercise versus I will find the time.
It's already gone. And on my website, I have an article that I've had published on travel, eating and traveling, vacation time and the eating is easy. So anybody can go on there and download that article.
That's a good one, because I know that so many people come back from vacation and say, oh, my gosh, I just went off the rails. And then when they come back, it's so hard to kind of get back in their routine and the regime. And, you know, I know one of the things, and we've touched upon this a little bit before, but the time, finding the time and putting, you know, there's a lot of very articulate ways you explain how and why it's so important for people to find the time for themselves and put themselves first. And I know particularly this is sometimes things a lot of women who might be the primary, you know, child care provider, or they're caring for a sick relative or an elderly parent. And same goes for men too, maybe, that are the primary care child, you know. But I do think a lot of times this can be a struggle that a lot of women will feel guilty about taking the time to do it,
right.
based on some other coaches, friends I know who say that constantly this is something they comes up time and time again in their practices. Well, what are, you know, we're getting close to the hour, but I would love some of your gems of wisdom on how you make the time and how you feel good about putting yourself and your health first.
Okay. Well, I think the most important thing is you need to invest time in your own well-being and your own health, because it doubles. If you can invest 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, it will double in your lifetime. You will have more quality of life. You know, none of us are guaranteed any amount of time, but years to our lives, I should say. But the amount of time we have here, if you take a certain amount of time each day, will double in quality in your lifetime. So there's just no two ways about that. You mentioned young mothers or people who are homebound because they're caring for sick relatives. I always say to my clients, everybody has a track in their house. And for me, it was my living room, dining room, and kitchen. I have a common wall between the living room, dining room, and kitchen. And that was my track. If I couldn't get out of the house, that was my track. And I would walk that for half an hour, you know, do 15 minutes one way, 15 minutes another way. You could do it around your dining room table. You can do, find the track that's in your house and use that track. And very often my clients who have young children, once I tell them that, that's what they start doing. So if you just start looking at things in different ways, and how can I use this, and how can I better me each day, how can I spend time each day to better me, it just pays off. It makes the time that you have for your life, it gives it a better quality.
Well, and it's worth a shot, right? None of us know how much time we have, but there's a lot of proof and evidence out there that if you are taking care of yourself, it's a better shot. So, you know, why, if you know the odds that you will at least feel better and, you know, take good odds that you might, you know, be staving off some of the things through a better diet and through exercise, you know, really you have nothing to lose, but you have only to gain.
Well,
we've talked about so much, and, you know, I just think, like I said, there's a lot of really good just gems of insight in your book, and I really, really enjoyed reading it, and I'm so glad you were able to come on the show to talk about it. Aside from your own book, what are some of the other resources out there that you like for either weight loss or inspiration for healthy foods or time-saving tips, books, websites, blogs, apps, you name it? What are some of the things that you like that's out there?
First of all, Jennifer, thank you for having me on, and thank you for reading my book. That just excites me so much. as far as what's out there, there is so much out there with so much quality information. But the one thing I always ask people to be very, very careful of is when you're reading all of these things, if it doesn't make sense to you, it doesn't make sense. There's a lot of myth, there's a lot of hype, and there's a lot of marketing. And the diet industry is a $60 billion a year industry. And there's many things that promote themselves as diet information, diet. And I use the word diet in a very positive manner. Diet just means the way we eat. So, but use your intelligence, use your knowledge when you're reading all of these items. And if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. Don't try and follow that. You know, look for something that really resonates with you, and you can say, that makes sense, and I can do that, rather than, oh, wow, that's quick, that's easy, you know, so-and-so is doing this, let me try this, you know. That makes sense, and I can do that in my life. And it just, it's intelligent, and it's smart, and it's going to help me.
That's really great advice, because I do think, and I hear that a lot as well, and people I work with, that it's just overwhelming how much information is out there, and it does feel conflicting at times. Like one week this is really good for you, and the next week something else is, and it really can be confusing and make people feel like being healthy and happy is really onerous and takes a lot of extra time and extra money that, frankly, none of us really have. But listening to your gut and trusting your instincts about whether something is right for you, and, you know, I think that's so wise to give that advice to people and, you know, help them parse through all the information that's out there instead of being overwhelmed Yeah.
Oh, and it is overwhelming, isn't it? But I just want to say this, if I could, because I tell my clients this all the time. There's always a new study out. And when you read the study, the first thing you have to ask yourself is, who is funding this study and what's their agenda? And then with those two questions, read the study and take from it what you need. Take from it what you'll believe. But know that somebody's funding the study and somebody has an agenda.
And really, it's getting back to basics, you know, and getting back to eating the whole foods and the real foods and, you know, just making smart, wise choices that don't have to be complicated. And so, you know, foods that people ate years and years ago that they grew in their gardens and, you know, that stuff still is in the supermarket. It's just also overshadowed by, you know, 10,000 other products that have been produced and made over the last couple of years or last, you know, however long. And every, you know, month there's something new being introduced, some new formulation. And there are a lot of, you know, good products out there that will help you maybe eat different foods, healthy foods that you might not have been introduced. I mean, I think the good thing is the internet allows us and the choice we have is great. So if you don't like one thing, there's probably something else out there that you can find. And there is a lot of variety to make eating healthy fun and exciting and not, like, I think you actually use this example in your book, not just, you know, grilled chicken and steamed broccoli, and that's what you have to eat every single night of your life if you're going to be thin and healthy, but because there are so many options. So. So very true. I like that. Who's funding it and who's marketing it? You know, everyone is out there to you know, make some money, and so you don't want to be the person that buys that magic shake or drink because you think it means you're going to, you know, lose all this weight quick and it's going to stay off. So there's a lot of choice and information out there and, you know, choose wisely and educate and empower yourself. Empower yourself to make those good choices. So, well, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you. I feel like we could just keep going, but I know we're almost at time. And I just wanted to thank all our listeners, and I hope that you found today's show really interesting and informative and inspiring to go make healthy choices in your life. And really, Margaret, can't thank you enough. And you can find Margaret at www.margaretmarshall.com, and she's
MargaretMarshallAssoc.com.
Yes, I didn't know if I was going to say the Assoc part correctly.
Yeah.
So, and you can also contact me with any questions at JenniferFDuffy@gmail.com. You can also give feedback at www.blogtalkradio.com/LifeCoachRadio Network. You can click the follow button and send us a message. I also hope you'll check out some of the next upcoming shows on the network. We have Spiritually Speaking with Rev Jen Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern, Fun to Fortune Entrepreneur Startup Success with Coach Jeff Tuesday at noon Eastern, and Get a Job with Kathleen Brady Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And so that's it for today. Thank you again, Margaret, and wishing everyone a very happy, healthy weekend.